Welcome to Dog Parkology. This is a story about dog parks, how they came to be, why they're essential, and how they might evolve to make life better. In the earliest days of North America, Native Americans kept dogs as hunting partners, camp security, and companions for their children. Dogs lived freely alongside their humans and were considered special members of the tribe, unique and important animal allies. They were beloved as friends, co-workers, and family members. We chose dogs, and they chose us. As American society and culture changed, so did the roles of our dogs. In the 19th century, they were primarily working animals, focused on herding and hunting. By the beginning of the 20th century, as the agricultural economy shifted to industrial, fewer and fewer people lived off the land, instead flocking to cities for jobs. There was less demand for dogs to work outside and more for them as companions. Coming out of World War II in the 1950s, the suburbs started to emerge, and so did dogs. They became part of the picture of the idealized American dream, which included a home with a white picket fence, two smiling parents, a couple of kids, and a dog. No other family represented this better than the Kennedys, who were said to be crazy about dogs because of their hopeful spirit. Throughout his political career, including his presidency, Kennedy modeled for Americans how a dog could be part of the family. His beautiful wife Jackie and their children were often photographed with their four dogs at home in the White House and on vacation. The dogs didn't sleep inside. Instead, they spent their nights in a kennel on the property. This was typical of most American families. During the 60s and 70s, dogs were outside in the backyard with a doghouse for shelter. During the day, they would mostly roam freely throughout neighborhoods. TV, movies, and the funny pages also portrayed dogs this way. Think about Snoopy without a leash lying on top of his signature red doghouse, or heroic collie Lassie exploring the town on her own all day and sleeping in a backyard shed. While there is more room in the burbs, living with dogs in cities presented challenges. Dogs mainly lived inside smaller apartments and required regular walks outside. Cities technically had leash and licensing laws, but most people disregarded them, and the rules were rarely enforced. Dogs were pretty free to walk city streets and explore public parks, with their humans not too far behind. In this era, our best friends had a good life, filled with freedom and a strong sense of agency. But as dogs' popularity grew, so did complaints. A 1976 New York Times headline read, "Urban dog population is a rising problem. Many owners let their dogs run unleashed in city parks," the article says, "a practice that often frightens mothers with infants, that turns some park areas into wallows of canine feces, and that presents a special peril to joggers and runners who provide tempting moving targets." There were also concerns about barking, indiscriminate breeding, or dog abandonment, leading to strays and overpopulated shelters. Then came the crackdown. First the cities, then the suburbs decided to address these problems with new rules. Many communities passed stricter dog control ordinances and began to enforce leash laws. The idea was having a human attached to a dog by a leash would minimize undesirable behavior. Not everybody was happy about keeping dogs on leash all the time. Dogs need freedom to run, to exercise, to play with others, and to express themselves. In the late 70s, in California's San Francisco Bay Area, a small group of dog owners informally gathered in a Berkeley public park to challenge leash laws. Berkeley was known for political activism and fighting for civic justice, including a hard-fought battle to reclaim private land for community benefit, aptly named the People's Park. An annex to that park, a two-block stretch of land on Hearst Street, where residents frequently brought their dogs, would go on to change dogs' lives forever. In 1979, a group of locals petitioned to create an experimental dog park. They described this innovative concept as a large fenced area with trees, grass, and benches for the human guests. The group clarified this was not a gated dog run with a narrow paved lane for just a few dogs to exercise. Instead, they envisioned it just like other public parks, but where everyone could legally let dogs run free. An unintended benefit was that fellow dog parents met neighbors there and created a tight-knit community. These casual human friendships proved to be a driving force behind the popularity. The place became known as the Ohlone Dog Park, with the name nodding to the Native American tribe who originally occupied that land. It is considered the first dog park in the world. Today, there are more than 1,000 official dog parks in the United States, and now almost half of households own a dog. Since 1980, the prominence of dogs, our understanding of their psychology, and our behavior has changed a lot. Scientific research on how dogs think and our relationship with them has also exploded over the last decade. Duke University founded the first canine cognition center to research how dogs' and humans' minds converge in outstanding ways. Similar programs soon followed at Yale, the University of Denver, and Penn, with dedicated programs on canine research emerging from schools of anthropology, psychology, and veterinary medicine. Technologies like the internet and social media have disrupted human behavior in lasting ways. On-screen interaction has replaced many in-person experiences, from shopping to dating and working. Our lives have also been forever changed by the global COVID-19 pandemic. During lockdown, we were encouraged to isolate to minimize the spread of the virus. This normalized remote work for many Americans, merging the home and office into the same place. First-time dog adoption rates soared during the pandemic as people sought connection with new furry best friends. Canine companionship became a crucial mental health support. Throughout it all, dog parks remained one of the few safe places people could take their dogs to play and socialize with other humans. This drove home dog parks' importance for community activity, interaction, and bonding. While the number of dog parks has increased since their founding at Berkeley, the original concept has not changed much in almost 50 years. The traditional fenced-in dog park is still the prevalent model. In dog parkology, we want to build out from the traditional elements of the dog park and move forward with ideas that will help us build better connections with our dogs, with each other, and with the land. It's time to think outside the fence about what the future of our dog parks might look like. Thank you for listening to this episode of Dog Parkology. I'm Jenna Blum, your narrator. This show was created by As It Should Be Productions, the creators of Dog Save the People and Dog Walk Meditation podcasts, with executive producer Scott Benaglio and producer and editor Jack Summer. Be sure to check out the entire season of Dog Parkology by following the show on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts. You can follow us on social media at Dog Parkology and Dog Save the People. You can visit our website, dogparkology.com, to learn more about the show and to buy custom designed merch like our t-shirts. If you know of any great dog parks in your area, or you've created your own Dog Parkology moment, you can email us at dogparkology@gmail.com. We'd love to hear about your experience. And if you've enjoyed listening to this episode, please share it with a friend. Enjoy a trip to a dog park today, or wherever you go with your dog, to appreciate nature, meet others, and make a better life together.